Hi, I'm Charlotte I, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. And isn't this beautiful? You know, when I sit here filling my face, I forget about all of the people who work all year long so that I can come here to fill my face. And I want you to know I think it's so beautiful, and I want to thank all of you. And particularly, I would like to thank Vi for asking me to be here today and for allowing me to have this wonderful experience. Now, I've had a lot of requests. A lot of people here have wanted me to come and tell the real story. My husband has been making up speeches for me all morning. I do not believe I have enough time to really tell you about the real Clancy. But we have had a beautiful morning. I'm getting him so well trained. He served me breakfast out on the patio this morning as I gazed out at the boats. And I'm just having a wonderful, marvelous time. And I thank you for coming to San Diego. Our theme is a new beginning. When one is enjoying all the things that I'm enjoying, and right now, to tell you the truth, I'd like to go upstairs for a little siesta. And it's very hard for me to believe that things haven't always been like this. But I'm going to, before I start about the new beginning, I think I'll take you back to the old beginning or the very beginning. I have a lot of time, so I want to take you back to the place where I was born. Now, I feel like I was born 29 years ago. When I came into Al-Anon, I felt like I had been born 85 years ago at that time. The truth of the matter is I was born a little over 53 years ago. And I'm so happy to admit that because I am so happy that I'm here today. But if anybody should ask you, I am 29. And with the help of Al-Anon, I hope to remain that way. Now, I was born in a little place in Wisconsin that nobody's ever heard of, way out in the backwoods. And I really have to believe that God has a purpose for all of us. I mean, you know, he got me from the backwoods way down here to San Diego. But I was born in a beautiful place, and I had beautiful parents who were they were not educated as far as reading and writing and arithmetic. But they were very wise, and they were very honest, and they were very full of love. And I am grateful now that I was born in a place like that. I haven't always been grateful for that. In fact, I tended to blame some of my problems on the place where I was born. One thing my parents always encouraged me in was get an education. Get an education. They didn't want me to have the hard life that they had had. And, you know, I've got a complete blank there. I don't have it memorized, but I forgot what happened when they said get an education. Oh, I know what happened. I went to school. And now, 53 years later, I'm still going to school. That's true, too. But I set my goals very early in life. Now, my parents were the kind that taught us children to believe in God, to go to church, and all those things. And at a very early age, I imagine about 4 years old, I knew what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a city person. And so I set my goals early. I was going to be a nurse, and I was going to marry a city fellow. Now that I've been in Al-Anon, I realize what a lot of my problems were, even back then. But I went to school, and then I left home, and I went to college, and I met my city fellow, sitting right over there. And I fell in love with him instantly. Talk about it takes a certain kind of a personality to fall in love with a certain kind of personality. But I really did. I went with other boys that really loved me, and boys that went to school and were very responsible, and when they graduated, they got jobs and they took care of their families. And some of them even proposed to me. And you know that there was only one that I was in love with. And so it wasn't too long, and I chased him long enough, and I captured him. And right from the beginning, now when I married Clancy, when we were going together, we never went to a place where drinks were served. We spent most of our time in a little drugstore, believe it or not, drinking Green Rivers. And oh, can you ever make beautiful plans for the future drinking Green Rivers? So I had no idea that he had any problems with alcohol. And yet I know right in the beginning we had problems with alcohol, right in the beginning of our marriage. And I never paid any attention to the fact that, one thing, you know, Clancy was going to school then, and he'd come home from school, and he'd always smell funny. And he'd say, I just stopped in with the boys and had two drinks. Now, even when, much later on, when he was drinking, it seemed like more and more, Clancy never drank more than two drinks. Now, I don't want to take his inventory, but that's the honest to God's truth, because he told me. And he would come home, and then we never seemed to have much money, I mean, when it came to the necessities of life. But we always had, I thought I had to work hard to see that he was kept happy. And one way to keep him happy was to see that he had money enough when he had to go out for his two drinks. Now, during those years, and really, we didn't have too many years where, I didn't have too many years where I lived with a practicing alcoholic. And yet it seemed to me at the time that I had lived with one forever. And I felt very sorry for myself. And I knew I felt sorry for myself, but I knew I was justified. Because here was this lovely little farm girl that had come to the big city and had married this man, and I had all these hopes and dreams of what life was going to be like. And here he was drinking. And I didn't even know he drank when I married him. So you see, I was a victim of circumstances. And I nursed that for a long, long, long time. And anyway, life went on. And we had little children. And then Clancy had to drink more. Because, you see, every time there was more responsibility in the house, he had to find, you know, something to kind of calm himself. And I took it upon my shoulders to know that I caused him to drink. I carried that little guilt along with me, too. I know I was responsible for it. He went to these various doctors at different places, and they always, they never mentioned that he was had any problems with alcohol, but they always mentioned he had some kind of a big, long mental problem. It's very, very long. I can't even pronounce it. But I'll tell you the truth. I was relieved to hear that his problem was a mental problem, because it wasn't nearly as hard for me to face life knowing I had a husband who had a mental problem as it was to think I had a husband who drank too much, because I thought anyone who drank too much was kind of spineless, like a spineless little jellyfish, and didn't really have any strength and you know, I suppose you could call me one of those self-righteous people. But it was very hard for me to think drinking was the problem with Clancy. So you see, I welcome these wonderful doctors and these wonderful people who kept telling me that it wasn't, Clancy's problem was all just a mental problem. Now, when we met, I was going through my stage where I knew everything there is to know. I found out that it usually hits a person about 17. And I gave up all of the things my parents taught me, and I went my own way. And my own way was to find the man I was really in love with and get married and live happily ever after. Now, we had only been married a few years when I had what I call, for me, a spiritual awakening. And I have to tell this because this really is a very vital part of my program. Although at the time I was way out in left field and didn't even know it was a spiritual awakening. Of course, I didn't know I was out in left field either, so it all added up. But when we had only been married a few years, we had two wonderful little children. And I can tell you at that time, I really thought I was the luckiest person in the world. I thought I had everything in the world that I needed. I really was happy. It may have been a false kind of happiness, but I was as happy as a clam. And anyway, then, quite suddenly, our second child died. It was a little boy. And that was really the most horrifying experience I have ever had in my life. And at the time, I couldn't eat, oh, for those days now, and I couldn't sleep, and the only peace I got was to walk out in the snow, on that hard, crusty snow, and you hear a noise under your feet. And I would walk out on the snow at night, and I would look up at the stars, and that was the only peace I had. And finally, I was really getting kind of, you know, down there. And Clance, he wasn't too high up either. And I didn't realize, I mean, I couldn't feel for him. It was a terrifying, horrifying thing for him to lose his son, too. But I wasn't concerned with him. I was concerned with me. But then one day I said, "Oh, God, please help me." And those are the only words I said. And that's been 33 years ago. And from that day to this, I have had a God that I call my own. So when I came into the program, that wasn't a difficult concept for me to believe in a God or a power greater than myself. But before I keep looking at this because I don't want to run out of time. But before I even got into the program, before I even knew I was married to an alcoholic, we went down that happy road where Clancy would drink, and I would help him. I would help him. I would even serve it to him. I wanted him to keep it in the refrigerator because if he kept it in the refrigerator, then he might not go out to drink. Now, somebody was reading Understanding Ourselves talking about the expensive liquor being poured down the sink. And as I sat there, I thought, what better place for expensive liquor? Now, that's the way I feel today. But then I would have never poured out anything. In fact, I was very, very, I was very glad when Clancy kept his booze at home. And you see, it wasn't booze that it was the problem. It was other things. And if I could only do things better, I thought to myself, Clancy wouldn't have to drink. But I was a wonderful actress. When I went out with the children, I would always hold my head up high, and I would always act like we were the happiest young couple in the world. And I can still feel that feeling that I felt then when I'd walk down the street. And I would never tell anybody, you know, that Clancy drank, except the professionals that he went to. I had a very high respect for professionals in those days. I'd like to say I don't have a high respect for them. No, now I realize they're people just like we're people. But in those days, I thought when the doctor said something, that was like God speaking, so I listened. And as time went on, and I didn't know this was happening. Now, the things I am telling you, the things that I am aware of, are all things that have happened since I got into Al-Anon. When I was living through those things, I wasn't saying to myself, gee, I'm getting more and more resentful. Or gee, I'm angry today. Or gee, I'm covering up for that alcoholic. I had no idea that that's what I was doing. And I spent a lot of time feeling like the ugly duckling and knowing if I were as beautiful and as sophisticated as those women in the bars, my husband would never have to leave home. And I felt so inadequate inside. And yet outside, I would pretend I felt very adequate. And a little of that goes back to my earlier. I'll go back. Now I'll start going back again. But my parents were such wonderful people that they never, ever did anything but give me love and make me feel like I was a fairy princess. So you see, when I was living with this person that I didn't feel quite adequate to, then I still had the feeling, but I'm a princess because my parents had instilled that in me, that I was a wonderful, beautiful princess. I could do no wrong. So I always had these emotions going back and forth, back and forth. And the doctors would tell me that if I would, well, the one doctor that we went to, God bless him, I'll never forget him, he wanted to see me. And he would ask me questions, and all the time I was talking, he'd say, "Is it fate or is it destiny?" And I sat there wondering, is it fate or is it? And you know, to this day, I don't know if it's fate or if it's destiny. So anyway, we had to find solutions to our problems, and we found solutions about every year or so, because we found a solution by moving to a new town. Now, Clancy was also, I don't want to take his inventory, and not in his presence anyway, but he was always getting himself into trouble with the police. And he would say to me, especially in Eau Claire, they used to always be getting on his case, throwing him in jail, things like that. And he'd say to me that they were jealous of him because he was so brilliant. And the Imislims were a big family in Eau Claire, so the police were jealous, so they put him in jail. The sad part of that little tale is I believed him. So when we went to Beloit, it was the same thing, you know. They always were picking on my husband. And Beloit was a happy town because we had two daughters there, and it was also a very sad town. One time in Beloit, I went to work at two jobs. I've always worked, but I went to work at two jobs because I knew if I made enough money, then Clancy could be happy. My whole every waking moment was filled with how can I make that man happy? And I knew it wasn't drink that was the problem, but if he stayed away from it, maybe it would help. So therefore, I had to concentrate on that. I've always been very good at numbers. I didn't realize that. Now I know why I was good at numbers. Because whenever we moved to a new city, the numbers I always memorized first were the numbers of the hospitals and the police department. And every morning I would get up, and after I took care of the kids' needs, and I thank God I had children. I mean, they really were my salvation. Because at least I had to take my eyes and my mind off Clancy long enough to give them their food and whatever little kids need. But as soon as I got them their breakfast in the morning, I was on that phone and I was dialing until I wore out my little finger, dialing the hospitals, asking if Clancy was there. And quite often he was. I think only once in Beloit. But I was very efficient at that, just absolutely obsessed with that idea of how I was going to help them. Now, from Beloit, we went to Texas. I knew in Texas, and really, the first 2 weeks we were in Texas, it was a virtual paradise. Those were two of the happiest weeks of our married life. The only 2 weeks up to that time. No, but and during that time, Clancy didn't drink. Didn't drink. And we were so happy. And then Tom O'Leary came to town. And right away, he started in. But you know whose fault it was? It was Tom O'Leary's fault. I had to hate him for 15 years. It was also in El Paso that Clancy very nearly finished himself in, and he got sent to the state hospital in there. Now, when he got out of that hospital, they gave me such great power. And what a mistake those doctors made to give a potential Al-Anon the power they gave me over another human being. A potential Al-Anon who could control any situation, who could take care of herself. When he left that hospital, they gave me a big stack of papers and a big bottle of Thorazine. And the Thorazine was supposed to be given to him 3 times a day. I did it faithfully. And he just sat there like a zombie. And the big stack of papers was so I could send in a weekly report on his behavior. These doctors that I respected so, they gave me all that power. Now, as I say, I had a spiritual awakening 33 years ago when I came to believe in God. And I know that God was taking care of me then. I can't say, gee, I was so wonderful, I didn't call the hospital and have him sent back. That's not true. I was just kind of, by that time, the only way I can describe myself is a bunch of skin over bones. So I was not that wonderful. I could put the wonderful look on for the world, but I wasn't feeling that. And I had all that power over this other human being. And at the time, I didn't realize what a really horrible thing it was. And it must have been really horrible for Clancy, too. I never openly bragged about my power and said, oh, boy, I've got it over him. But inside, I knew I had it. But I was very faithful. I'd give him his Thorazine, and I'd send off my little report every week just as faithful as I could be. And Clancy didn't act funny then. They told me to call them immediately if he started acting funny. And he didn't act funny again until he had his first drink of liquor again. And, you know, there was something in me that didn't let me call that hospital, thank God. Oh, by this time, we hadn't moved yet. I know why I didn't call the hospital. I was pregnant, and after all, a drunken husband is better than no husband when you're pregnant. So I didn't call the hospital. But then we had to go to another city, Dallas. We were going to start over fresh there. So we went to Dallas. Now, it was in Dallas that I had my second bottom. I hit my first one when my son died, but since I didn't know anything about, you know, things like that, I didn't know it was that. But I hit the second one when I was in Dallas. And at that time, I went to talk to a Methodist minister, which really takes a lot of courage for a Catholic girl. But I went to talk to this Methodist minister because somebody told me he knew a lot about alcoholics. And I did not believe Clancy was an alcoholic, but you see, at the same time, I must have believed he was an alcoholic, because why did I latch on to talking to somebody who knew something about alcoholics? So I went to talk to this Reverend Tom Shipp, and I described our case. I took Clancy's inventory for him, and he said to me, "You're married to an alcoholic." I still did not accept that part in my insides. And he said, what you should do, or what your responsibility is to think of yourself and the children. Now, we had four children at that time. And he said, get out of the situation. And I said, but what if I get out of the situation and he kills himself? And he says, if he's determined to kill himself, he'll do it. He said, you might hang around and keep him from it for a while, but if he's determined to kill himself, if that's his desire, then that's also his responsibility. It isn't yours. Now, I'd never heard anybody say anything like that before. But I guess I was ready, because it made sense. And so I immediately started getting things in order. And there again, my higher power was guiding me, because it was certainly one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life. But I made plans for child care and board at a place, and I got a job, and I made plans to move. And just the night, and Clancy's boss and I had been conversing regularly. You know, I'd go down there for the check and things like that. And he told me that he had to let Clancy go. So I knew all that too. So I got myself everything put together. Now, the night before, when Clancy came home to tell me he'd lost his job, He said, you know, Charlotte, I'm going to stop all this, and we're going to get a new start, and we're going to get started all over again. And how many times had I heard that? You know, 100, 200? And I very nearly weakened. Now, I had all these plans made where I would be able to get out of the situation, and yet when he said, I'm sorry, we're going to start over, I believed it. I really did. And I came just within 1 inch of telling him the horrible plan I was, you know, had in force. And really, to me, it was a horrible plan then. Now I think it was the most wonderful, marvelous thing I ever did, and I was very brave and courageous. But at the time, I felt like I was just being so mean and so cruel. Here was this poor man who had all these problems, and I was going to take his children away from him, and I was just going to leave him, and I wasn't even going to tell him a thing about it. And I felt very mean inside. But thank God was with me then, and I did not cancel my plans, and I did not tell him of the plans, and of course, he had to go out and, you know, celebrate the new start we were going to get. And so while he was gone, I packed up the kids, and I went. And he didn't know where we went. He, to this day, he still does not know where we went. He's never asked me, and I'm never going to tell him. It's a woman named Mrs. Parton. But anyway, I left, and I knew that if he wanted to contact me, he knew where I worked. He could contact me through work. When I left him, I was just absolutely scared to death. I was scared of what he would do when he found out I'd taken the children. When I got home on the bus at night to go home from work, I'd look behind me to see if he was following. I went through weeks and weeks of panic and fear. I went through 10 years of panic and fear. In fact, I went through about 30 of them before that and didn't realize I was going through panic and fear. And not knowing the patterns of alcoholics, and I suppose the patterns, I mean, according to stories, they seem to be very much the same. But they really aren't a group that's violent or is going out to kill you, I don't think. They say they are, but I know now that I didn't have to be afraid of Clancy. Well, you know, when I was looking over my shoulder all the time to see if he was behind me, he was on his way to California. So all of that was needless. So anyway, then, we got together. 5 years it took. And I guess then I had learned to, if I would have thought ahead and thought, well, gee, I won't get back together with him for 5 years, I suppose I would have been very, very destitute. But then when I left him, I felt pretty bad anyway. I mean, that is when I can honestly say inside I was absolutely hollow. And I had no Al-Anon, and I had no AA, and I didn't even know I was married to an alcoholic. You know, I didn't have anything back there in 1958. And Clancy would call me from California, and he'd say, I have been sober X number of days. And I'd say, he'd call me at work, and I'd say, oh, that's nice. And inside I would say, I'll bet. And it would go on, and he'd tell me he'd been sober. He even came to Dallas and talked at an AA meeting, and I went and listened to him. And I thought it all sounded very phony. But he'd keep telling me he'd been sober, and I'd keep thinking. But I never, thank God, I didn't say to him, I know you haven't been sober. But how many times had he said he was going to stay sober? And besides, that wasn't the problem, you know, in my mind. We got back together. I came out here, and it was very, very foreign to me. And he'd take me to these AA meetings. And I don't know if other Al-Anons are like me, but I love AA meetings. I have always loved AA meetings. I particularly love them when the man gets up and he tells of all the rotten dirt he did to hurt his poor little wife. I used to love to hear Norm Alpie talk about how he hurt his poor little wife and how wonderful and saintly she was. Clancy used to call me a saint, too, until I convinced him differently. But Clancy did really refer to me as a saint, and it's very bad. Because people call you a saint and you get to the point where you think, I'm a saint, I'm wonderful. And so AA meetings now are good for me because I can keep things in the proper perspective. But back in those days when I went to AA meetings and they told me how brave I was to put up with a man like Clancy, I thought, oh, how brave I am, how wonderful, you know. And at the same time, I felt rotten inside. Now, Vi said that an AA got her to Al-Anon, and the alcoholics got me to Al-Anon, too. I used to go to their meetings, and they would say, have you been to Al-Anon yet? Been to it? I'd never even heard of it. And I wanted to win brownie points with the alcoholics, so I thought, well, I better go to an Al-Anon meeting. So I went to an Al-Anon meeting. The first meeting that I went to, I absolutely hated it. You see, I did not have any problems. I had led a very nice life. I'd taken care of my four little children without my husband. I had a good job in computers. I was a very brave, wonderful person. So I certainly didn't need Al-Anon. I did not go to Al-Anon because I needed it, and I did not go to get my husband sober because he'd been sober for 5 years. Now, at my first Al-Anon meeting, I heard the words that probably saved our marriage, and I always repeat these in a talk. This woman got up to talk, and she said, When my husband was drinking, I nearly divorced him. And when he sobered up, he nearly divorced me. Because every time I'd go to a meeting with him, and I heard the speaker would say something that would remind me of in the elbow. And all the way home, I'd tell him how AA should be run. And you know, as mixed up and confused as I was back there in 1963, those words made sense to me. Now, Clancy went to a lot of meetings, and he would come home, and when he'd come into the bedroom, I'd be lying there pretending to be asleep, and I'd take a big, deep breath, thoroughly expecting to smell alcohol. And this is after the man has been sober over 5 years. But the good Lord kept me going back to Al-Anon. I didn't need it. I didn't like it. But I went back. And I didn't hear another thing that I liked for a whole year. I absolutely hated Al-Anon. I grew very slowly on the program. I came home one night. It was a Thursday night, and I'll never forget it. And I said to Clancy, and I think I probably cried when I told him, I said, I'm never going to another Al-Anon meeting. And that's probably the first time in Clancy's life, before or since, that he didn't say, you have to do something or you have to go. He said, if you don't want to go, you don't have to. But I kept going. I mean, it was almost by magic I kept going. I went to Al-Anon for, oh, I don't know how long, before I realized it wasn't doing me any good, but it can't do you any good if you don't need it. And then somebody suggested that maybe I do something about the steps. Now, I thought the steps were great for alcoholics. I knew that alcoholics could benefit from those steps. But no one as wonderful as I was needed them. Now, I tell you how wonderful I thought I was, and at the same time, I was so filled with fear that there was no way I could have shared at an Al-Anon meeting. And the reason I hated those Al-Anons so much, I discovered, was because they would get up there and they would talk about fear and inadequacy and self-pity and resentment. All of the things I couldn't even dare admit I had. So I had to dislike the Al-Anons. So it wasn't that I really thought I was so good, but if I pretended I thought I was so good, then I could rationalize and say, I don't need Al-Anon. Now, the first step wasn't too bad. In fact, I think the first step is marvelous, and I use it all the time today. I'm always starting over on step number one. But I discovered that instead of saying, I am powerless over alcohol, I can say, I am powerless over everything. I am powerless over people, persons, and things. I've learned all of that in Al-Anon. The second step was terribly, terribly hard for me. Came to believe a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. How could I possibly look at that step and apply it to me? Because to believe somebody's going to restore us to sanity, we have to admit we're insane. And to this day, I do not like the word insanity. I do not like the word crazy, even in jest. Maybe I'm afraid I'm going there. But to me, insane is to be in a little cell with padded walls. So I could never, never stand step two until somebody said, substitute defects of character. Well, maybe by that time I could think, well, I might have one or two things wrong with me. The third one wasn't hard for me, and yet it was hard because I had God in my life. But you see, all the time I had God in my life, I said, now, if you will do this for me, God, I will do thus and so. I was always bargaining with God, making promises that I would do this if he'd do that. God has answered many of my prayers. He's answered many of my requests. One of my greatest ones was, I'd love to have a sober husband someday. I got that, a healthy, happy family. God has been very good to me. But as I say, in those days, I told him what to do. I gave him instructions just like I gave Clancy instructions before that and just like I tried to give everybody else instructions. Today, I have a different feeling toward God. My program is very simple. I get up in the morning, I turn my life and my will over to him, and then I don't worry that day about what am I going to say. I don't worry about what I'm going to say. I try to be nice, but I know that if I really turn my will over, that whatever I say during that day, it's going to be fine. Because if you really turn your life and your will over, God isn't going to let you say anything that's going to hurt you or hurt anybody else. And then I want to tell you about the wonderful fourth step, which I procrastinated on and procrastinated on. Finally took it, and all the time I was writing it, I carried my little pad around in my purse and then worried that I might get struck down by a car and killed, and the whole world would know. And then I would, when I was around home working, I would hide it between the spring and the mattress. So if Clancy came in unexpectedly, he would never find it. Always afraid he was going to find it, never really realizing he wasn't even looking for it, you know. So I took it because my sponsor suggested I might feel better if I took the fourth step. So after I got it all done, I had a little ceremony, and I burned it ever so nicely. But I didn't feel any different. I didn't feel any different. And my sponsor said, you have to take your fourth step. I said, I did take my fourth step. She said, where is it? And I said, I burned it. And she said, that isn't the way it's done. You have to take your fourth step, and then you have to read it. And oh, that I couldn't bear to do. But you know, when you feel bad enough, long enough, you finally decide, well, maybe you should do what Al-Anon says. I mean, if you're going to be in the program, then you probably should do like they say. So I took the fourth step, and then I got enough courage. And when I took it the second time, I was as bad as I was the first time, carrying my little pad every place, afraid I might die and it would be revealed to the world. And then hid it between the mattress and the spring. But I finally took my fourth step, and with that, to me, the real freedom came. The real freedom. That's when my self-pity left. That's when the resentments left. Because although I loved Clancy, I hated him. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that feeling, that you can love someone and hate them. And all the resentments that I really didn't recognize as resentments, I called them justifiable anger, you know. All those came out. And the day I took my fifth step, I could have flown any place in the world without an airplane. I was just up on cloud nine. And I have people that I sponsor now who try to get out of the fourth step. I have people who, when I tell them they have to take a fourth step, I give them a couple of years, and then they resign me as a sponsor. And I know the feeling. I know how I thought it was so good for alcoholics. But we Al-Anons, we're not looking for anybody to keep us sober, so why do we have to do that? But I also know that if we do it, it really, really works. And then after that humbling experience, then the rest of the program can come more easily. Until you get up to that beautiful, wonderful 12th step, when it promises a spiritual awakening if you work the steps. We have that promise of a spiritual awakening, and it's beautiful. Now, to get back to our theme and a new beginning, I could say that I got my new beginning when I came into Al-Anon. And I could say that I got my new beginning when Clancy got sober. Or I could say I got a new beginning when I took my fourth step. But Al-Anon has taught me that I get a new beginning each day. Every morning when I wake up, I get a new beginning. I can forget about yesterday. And every night when I go to bed, I can say I'm sorry for the mistakes I make. Because I may have told you that since I got into the program, I got perfect. But no, that's not true. I'm not perfect at all. We do have a lot to be grateful for. And each day, I thank God for all the things I've got to be grateful for. In fact, I'd like to mention a little bit about gratitude and that one of the tools I use to bring me out of the dumps when I get down in the dumps. Because even with the program, we're all very human. And there are some days when I get up in the morning And my God, I think the sky fell during the night and it landed right on my head. And there are some days I get up and, oh my goodness, life is wonderful, everything's good. But if I keep my, I get too close to this, I think it's a little snake and I want to make love with it, I guess. I hate them. Reminds me, before we came down here, we watched a TV program with a snake on it, and they're the animals that I really can't stand. But to get back to my story, but one of the things I use on those days when I'm feeling down in the dumps is I take my paper and my pencil and I make a list of all the things I've got to be grateful for. And Clancy and I have a lot of things to be grateful for. We have 5 beautiful, healthy children. And they're children like everybody's children. But one thing, I thank God that they haven't given us any big heartaches. And I also think maybe the reason they haven't is because God knows that maybe we'd both be too weak to handle them. I don't know. But he did really. He did give us a great gift in our children. And speaking of our children, I must tell you that on December 15th, I went through another thing. Because, you see, one of the things I didn't mention is I love, but I love with a possessive love. I mean, I love Clancy, but I loved him. I wanted to hold on to him. And Al-Anon taught me how I had to let him go. I had to let him go out and do what he had to do in God's work. And then I could have him. But then I still had the possessive love. It pertained to my children. I always tell the story of when our oldest daughter got married. And every night, I would drive by about 10 o'clock at night to see if her husband was home with her. I don't think my husband even knows that. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. I never did know what I would do if I drove by and he wasn't there, because he was a nice guy. He was always home. But that didn't sound very nice, did it? But anyway, so what I'm saying is I don't let my children go easily. I want to keep them. I forget they've only been loaned to me. I do not have a right to possess them any more than I have a right to possess my husband. But I try. But after you let the first one go, then it's kind of easier with the second and third and fourth. And then we come down to our little baby boy, who I think is a prince, just like my parents thought I was a princess. And I have to admit, I've made every mistake in the world with him because he has never done anything wrong. Well, this little boy turned 8. If he heard me talking like this, he'd be so embarrassed. This little boy turned 18 on December 15th. And I sat there at the table, and I thought, I don't have anybody to take care of anymore. I mean, nobody to be responsible for. It's a very kind of a lost feeling. It's going to be worse when he goes off to college in September. The only thing I know is that with the program, I will be able to cope with it, no matter what happens. But I did sit there, and I took an inventory of my life and thought, I have nothing more that I'm responsible for. Thank God, my oldest daughter is always doing cute things for her mother. She got me a German Shepherd puppy last week. So now I have something to be responsible for. But you see, without Al-Anon, or before Al-Anon, I would never have been able to have coped with any of these problems. I would have never been able to have coped with the problem of raising children, period. But through Al-Anon, I can let them go. I can let them do what they have to do. And most of all, I am very grateful. And when I get in the dumps, like I said, I take out my little gratitude list and I write down all the things I've got to be grateful for. And if you do that when you're down in the dumps, I guarantee you that you will feel better. It is absolutely impossible to sit down and write down all the things you've got to be grateful for and not feel better. And I don't care how bad the day is, if you can walk around, or if you can't walk around, if you can talk or see or hear, you've got something to put on your little list. I don't really worry too much about anything anymore. I do a lot of work with a paper and pencil. In fact, I have such a detailed list at home that I write down everything I'm going to do in the morning. Maybe you can go overboard with lists, I don't know. But I make up a big one that lasts me for a couple of months. I just have to put down the my jobs. And first I put down all my animals so I won't forget to feed anybody. Then I put down all the things I'm going to do, like exercise and pack lunch and you know. But if you make these lists, then your mind is free because you don't have to think, well, I've got to pack lunch, or I've got to feed Byron, or I've got to get breakfast. You just put it on the list. And sometimes, I'll tell you, sometimes housework is no fun at all. Sometimes, I worked for many years. I felt sorry for myself when I was working, too. I always wanted to be home and just be a little housewife. So I'm home now, and I'm just a little housewife. And some days I think, I don't want to do that. And then I think, oh, how lucky I am to have this beautiful home and to have all this. My problem is not that I have too little. I should say our problem. Our problem is we have too much. And it is all as a result of Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hope when you go home today, you feel heavy, a feeling you're going to have for a short time. Because when you wake up in the morning, you're going to get a new beginning. And if you make each new beginning just as good as it, or if I make it as good as I can, then the next morning I'm going to have another new beginning, and it's going to be beautiful. And that 24 hours at a time, one day at a time, will get you through anything. It really will. Because you can do, I know I had somebody call me just before I came here. They were just dying. And I said, just take it today and do what's in front of you. And that is also one of, I have learned so many things from Al-Anon, and I'd love to go on and on and on and on all day telling you about the things that have helped me. But instead, I'm going to just say thank you. Thank you to all of you. Thank you to Vi. And thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon.